Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYED 94.1 FM through our good friends on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106liveradio.com. And, of course, those joining us around the world through blogtalkradio.com. We're glad you all could join us as well. Have a great hour coming up for our radio audience. Two great segments coming up, though, for our online audience. And we're kicking things off with author J.R. Thornton. We're going to speak with him not only about his love of writing, but also what it was life for him to take two things that he's familiar with, that being Beijing and tennis, and being able to craft a novel that is Beautiful Country that's out in April. If you're just now hearing about JR, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can stay connected with him, as well as how you can be able to get the book too. JR, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Very delighted to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine, JR. I really enjoyed the book. I know our audience is going to want to write this as one of their books to be able to read for next month as well. I mean, what has this experience been like for you, JR? As you're already beginning the press for the book, I know you're already promoting upcoming events for next month. What is it like for you to see this day finally come?
I mean, it's very exciting because it's I think one of the sort of unique things about writing fiction or writing anything in general is that you put a huge amount of work in up front, and you really have no idea if what you're working on will ever, you know, sort of see light of day. So it's nice to know that it's going to get out there and people are going to read it. And yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah. You know, I have heard authors, when they've come on this program in the past, JR, talk about the importance of writing what they know. Did that make it a little easier since you were writing about a place that you had been to, about something that you knew about? Did that make the journey easier as you were creating the journey of Chase Robinson?
So I guess I'll explain a little bit how the book sort of came about. I was over in Beijing when I was 14. I played tennis there for a year with the Chinese junior national team, and I kept journals every day, just sort of a diary to keep track of my experiences there. And when I came back over to the United States, I got more and more into creative writing, and in my final year of high school decided to attempt a novel. And at that point I really, you know, didn't have much sort of formal training in creative writing. I was just a kid who liked to read a lot. And so I started using those journals as material. And at that point, that was really helpful because it gave me a natural structure and it gave me material to draw on and sort of a roadmap for where I was going. But over time, as I sort of became a better writer, what I've found is that can be a good starting point, but you want to use it as a, just as, I guess my teacher at Harvard had a good way of saying this. He said, you want to use your real experiences as a scaffolding to build your story. And then once you've gotten it to that place, you can start to take that stuff away and build more into fiction. Because what I found was that, you know, the very first draft of the novel was closer to sort of a travelogue, whereas now it's changed completely. And you have to, you know, real life doesn't sort of fit into the neat arcs that fiction does, and you need to create conflict for the plot to work, and so you need to alter characters. And I think it's good to have that as the grounding, but you want to make it a more rich story, you have to expand into fiction.
Right. Exactly. And you know, what's so interesting, though, about Beautiful Country, JR, I thought this when I was reading the book and then, of course, knowing I was going to be talking with you about it, is that it reminds me of something that I have felt as I've read other books that have taken me to places I've never been to. And that is the connection and the familiarity that you feel, because I think one of the things that Beautiful Country reminds us all of is that whether you're talking about Beijing or the United States, that people are people and situations are situations, and there are individuals who are willing, you know, to do what they have to do or feel like they need to do in order to get what they want. Is that part of the connection that you think readers will feel, that these are people that even though they may not have been to the place that you set the book, they can definitely relate to the people in the place?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the unique points of having a 14-year-old narrator for the majority of the book is that And it was something that I noticed when I went over to China and when I came back to the United States, is that when you're 13, 14, you don't think about the world the way you do as an adult. And when you're, you know, meeting kids you're playing tennis with, you're both just kids, and you don't think about it in terms of cultural differences and this and that. And I think that sort of, you know, you're able to relate to people your own age better at that point in your life, because you don't see the world in the way that, with all the preconceived notions, you might as an adult. And so that was something that I really wanted to sort of get across with this book, is introducing people here to China on an individual personal level, rather than, you know, at the macro news level story or something. This is a way to sort of humanize it and relate that experience and show that even though maybe our languages and cultures are very different, that, you know, people there want the same things that people here want, which is, you know, to provide for their family and to be able to succeed and strive and, you know, be fulfilled.
Right. Exactly. I think that's it. And I think that's one of the big things about the book. We're going to get into another couple things that you write about in the book, J.R., one of them being friendship. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. J.R. Thornton is making his first appearance on our program today. We're discussing not only the journey that led him to write the book, Beautiful Country, that's out in April, but also what it's been like for him, of course, to explore things that he's familiar with as well. You mentioned, of course, having, you know, the narrator, that being Chase. Was it an easy decision for you to tell the story through his voice?
Well, it's when I started, it was, I just that was some sort of my default, was I was going to do a first person narration, because that felt easier to me, and I think that the voice is important for this story. Mm-hmm. Now when I think about telling stories, again, something I learned from my teacher at Harvard, Brett Johnston, who's a great writer. He said that you want to go third person unless the story can only be told from one point of view, and that point of view has to be a specific narrator. And I think that's totally the case in this book. I think part of the uniqueness of it is that it's a narrative that we haven't sort of had before, where when we've read books about China, they're told from Chinese perspective. And I think the perspective of an outsider in another culture can, you know, show people on both sides, different sides of it. And so that's sort of how I thought about it. At one point I was considering rewriting it with a third person narrator. But I decided to stick with it. And, I think it's a easier way to write a first novel. That's I think something Hemingway said was that anyone can write a novel in the first person, because it's, you're just sort of telling a story that in the way you tell a friend, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, I think the interesting thing about that, and what made me think about that question for you, JR, was that one of the scenes that to me was that really said a whole lot was the scene with Chase, Bowen, and Victoria, where Chase had invited Bowen, who is one of the other characters that readers will become familiar with in the book, along for this tour, even though Bowen was not initially invited. Chase figured, hey, it can't be a big deal. I thought about the reaction that takes place, where Victoria's like, you know what, you probably should ask. Chase is thinking, okay, it can't be such a big deal. Do you think that's also part of Chase looking at the world differently and not realizing how important little things like that were there, and why for some that was not something that was looked kindly on?
Yeah, completely. I think that's exactly sort of one of the points of that scene, is that Chase is viewing the situation as he would if he was in America, and he wanted to invite his buddy on, you know, in a tour that he was going on with his parents, and he's not fully seen all the nuances of the culture in China. And I think it's something that Chase learns over the course of his time there, is that he learns to see the world not just through his own eyes, but he learns how to see the world through others' eyes as well, and to
right.
and to understand that you know, things aren't always as they seem, and that life is more complicated than the black and white terms you saw before you went there.
Right.
And
you know, the other thing. I'm sorry, Jair.
Sorry, and I was just saying, you know, and that goes back to a little bit to the question of doing what you have to do to succeed, or you know, one in the novel, Bowen is lying about his age in order to get a competitive advantage, and Chase has a real problem with that because of the sort of, you know, the morals and the principles that we're taught over here when it comes to sportsmanship and fair play. But at the same time, you know, Bowen's facing, the stakes are extremely high for him. If he succeeds, he can become a successful professional, and if he doesn't, you know, he has no education and very few job prospects. So, you know, that's part of the conflict of the book is understanding that you can't always think about the world in the way that you see it, and that for other people the reality is different, and maybe the principles you have, they're great principles, but for, you know, someone else can't afford to look at the world in terms of strict right and wrong, and it's more gray than that.
Right, exactly. No, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, the thing that really got me too when I was reading the book was how, you know, that sense of belonging. And I think, again, that's a connection that all of us can have. Chase sees it in certain ways in the book. Bowen definitely experiences it. And I think we, by extension, experience it by feeling as though we're in a place that maybe we're not welcome, or we don't feel as though is right for us. What was that like for you to explore in the book, JR, the sense of what it means to belong and the sense of being able to find one's place of belonging?
I would say that Chase really struggles initially. That he's, you know, he's been sort of transplanted to a country where he can't really speak the language at all, and food's totally different from anything he's seen, and he doesn't really know anyone there, and you know, it's another country where it's extremely obvious that you're an outsider. At the time when Chase was there, and the time that I was there, it really wasn't even close to as internationalized as it is now. And you know, I remember when I was there at age 14, I'd go days without seeing another foreigner. And and so I think, you know, what he learns is that belonging is as much about a place that you feel comfortable as it is about being surrounded with people that care about you and you care about them. And that's something that Chase definitely gets as he becomes closer with Bowen and closer with Victoria, and sort of finds you know, the family that he's missing in a way. And Bowen comes to help him deal with his brother's loss. And so even though, you know, the culture might feel foreign to him, I think when he's with them, he feels like he belongs, and that it's less about geography as it is about the people you're with.
Right, exactly. I think the other side of that, JR, is the pressure to succeed. Again, something that those in the West definitely understand and appreciate as well. I think, as we see in the book, something that may be definitely emphasized more in a place like Beijing in the book. I think that is what definitely when it comes to Bowen in the book, and the way that he is treated, and the way that not just him, but what we're able to know about him, about, you know, when he isn't feeling up to, you know, being able to do his best because of, you know, being in pain, you know, what he is told, and realizing what is available to him, what's not available to him, and what he is, you know, the way he's kind of treated, and Chase can't really wrap his mind around that. I mean, what about that for you? I mean, what was it like for you to explore how that again is another common theme of, you know, a feeling as though, you know, one is not really appreciated, but also, of course, realizing the limitations that are there for some.
Well, it was really, you know, an eye-opening experience for me when I first arrived in Beijing as a 14-year-old, and having spent, you know, most of my time playing tennis. I was at academies in Florida where you have top coaches, really good players, you know, fantastic facilities, and you know, state-of-the-art gyms, the whole nine yards. And then when I was in Beijing, it was very old facilities that, you know, looked as though they'd been built in the middle of the communist era, and the gym was run down, and the coach didn't really know how to play tennis. She played a different sport initially, and yet the stakes were so much higher for the kids that I played with that, you know, things that every player I practiced with in America would have complained about or refused to play over or whatever, they just got on with it, and they worked as hard as they could because that was what they had to do. And, you know, they would run sprints by themselves at the end of practice and be playing with rackets that were 15 years old and all this stuff that I'd never, you know, really come face to face with before. And so that was something that really had a big impact on me and changed the way I, you know, my work ethic and sort of admiration for those kids and what they were doing. I was very impressed by, and these, you know, you have to remember these are 14-year-old kids we're talking about, and their
right.
The maturity and the, you know, the dedication is like a professional.
Right. I think that is it. I want to read a passage that I think says so much, and I want to talk to you about the parallel with yourself, J.R., and Chase in this instant when it comes to Bowen, who I've mentioned quite a bit. It had stopped raining some time before, and after we finished lunch, we walked back to the courts. We walked unhurried, perhaps because we both knew that the week and the freedom we had enjoyed was coming to an end. As we were walking, I realized that Bowen and I had become close friends. It was fun hanging out with him. It had been a long time since I had hung out with someone my own age who didn't act weird around me because of what happened to my brother. It was also the first time that I wasn't constantly thinking about the friends I had left behind in America. I realized I would miss Bowen when I went back, and I was struck with the sobering thought that I would probably never see or hear from him again after I left. What is it like for you to have forged the experiences, to have forged the relationships, and then to be separated from it and reflect on it?
Well, I think, you know, I was born in the UK, and then I moved to the United States when I was 12. Then I spent a year in China, went back to the United States, went to boarding school. So I've you know, sort of moved around all over my life and have sort of gone through those experiences a fair amount. So I guess that's, you know, seems natural now that that's something that would come up in the book because, you know, I have made a lot of friends over my life who, you know, I haven't been able to stay in touch with for one reason or another. And, you know, while that's definitely a shame, I think, you know, there's things you can learn from every friendship and every experience. And as long as you keep those, then it's, you know, that's important.
Right. You know, I began the conversation, JR, asking you about, you know, this moment finally being here, you know, after writing the book and now, of course, getting to a place where people will be able actually to buy it. I know you have events, as I mentioned earlier, that are scheduled for April. What is your hope? It is a novel. It is fiction. But I have often said on this program that sometimes fiction has a way of offering the truth of the world we live in a lot better than anything else. What is your hope when people finish the book that they're able to take away from it?
Well, first and foremost, you know, it is a novel, so I hope that people, you know, enjoy it for good, just being a good story. But I also definitely hope that it'll, you know, maybe color or humanize the way that some people view China here, because I think that the way it's reported on in the media a lot of the times is very one-dimensional and it's too simple a view, and it's an incredibly complex country. And I think that literature has sort of a unique ability to give people individualized experiences and be able to spread empathy through seeing the world through the way the characters do and understanding their experiences. And, you know, going back to what you just said, I think that, you know, since the beginning of recorded history, we've relied on on stories to transmit, you know, bigger truths and through mythology and everything. And I think that storytelling, there's sort of a unique way of being able to explain something very complex in a simple way, in a way that people can understand and relate to. So, and you know, a lot of it, I think, happens subconsciously too. So I hope that the people who enjoy the story will become interested, you know, perhaps more interested in China, or just learn a little bit, or whatever people get out of it. I'm just happy that the people are going to read it. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, that's the big thing for authors. They're just glad that their work is going to be available, and yours will be available in April again. Again, everyone, J.R. Thornton has been our guest for this segment. Great conversation with you, J.R. The title of the upcoming release is Beautiful Country. It's officially out in April. J.R., I know you have a website that's set up, and I found out before we went on here, and I now have liked it. You have a Facebook fan page as well. Let our audience know how they can stay connected with you.
Yeah, that's best way is through my website, jrthornton.net, or on my Facebook author page, which is J.R. Thornton. And Beautiful Country will be available on Amazon and in all bookstores starting on the 19th. So keep an eye out for it.
All right, so make sure you all are definitely staying connected with J.R., like his Facebook fan page, as well as, of course, stay connected through his website, jrthornton.net. JR, I really appreciate the time today and looking forward to staying connected with you.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. We thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For those joining us on the radio dial, we'll be right back after a break here with more Conversations Live. For those joining us online, though, we are going to lose you, so if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation with JR, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites, so head over to facebook.com/CyrusWebb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWebb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.